You and I back together again to wrap up the week on Friday, May 27th, 2022, right here on Connecticut. Today we had more tragic details about a delayed police response to that recent mass shooting at a school in Texas. University of New Haven political science and national security professor Dr. Matthew Schmidt joined the program again to talk about the continuing Russian invasion of Ukraine. Grace Torres, the principal at St. Mary St. Michael's School in Derby, came on to talk about the continuing role of Catholic school education in the U.S. and some fundraisers locally for that school.
As often happens in tragedy, whether it is mass shootings, terror attacks, bad things that happen in war, physical tragedies, flooding, hurricanes, tornadoes, earthquakes, plane crashes, any mass casualty incidents, there is always confusion, and there's that old thing that is referred to sometimes as fog of war, and you are told not to believe maybe anything and everything unless it's the basic facts of a case until everything has been metered out. So we find out today, and you heard that at the news at the top of the hour, and you'll hear that all afternoon as it is a breaking story. Cops are responding to that school massacre in Texas, quote unquote, made the wrong decision when they waited to breach the classroom door where that gunman barricaded himself inside with children. And again, this story is all over every news source. I'm taking these details out of the New York Post. But again, just think back over the last couple of days how changeable, tragically, yes, this story was, but how changeable this is. And at the outset, you heard, you know, police were on the scene. They confronted the suspect. They got into a shootout. And because of the, you know, the natural tendency to look at these things and want to make them, you know, quote unquote, maybe easy to figure out if that's such a thing, we want to believe the easiest and quickest details, you know, that we hear and we think just because it makes it easy that way. But there's always part of us, right, that sits back and hears all this and says, well, wait a minute, there's got to be something else here, because there usually is. And we find this out. The on-scene commander made the call, says here, that the carnage at the Robb Elementary School Tuesday had gone from an active shooter to a barricaded suspect situation. And that was said earlier today by Colonel Stephen McCraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety. He said in a press briefing, which to me, looking at him and looking at what he's wearing and the title here, sounds like the equivalent of the Texas State Police, I believe. Our state police here in Connecticut, by the way, are part of the Department of Public Safety. McCraw says, and here's the quote, folks, with the benefit of hindsight where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision, period. He continued, quote, there was no excuse for that. All right. So there is now more on this. That admission came as police reveal for the first time that the 18-year-old shooter, Salvador Ramos, fired off at least 100 rounds and marched in through an unlocked door that had been propped open by a teacher before he killed 19 students and two teachers. And again, folks, when I read this stuff, I'm not trying to ascribe blame to it here. I'm not. But a lot of you are busy. A lot of you are, you know, deluged by news sources here. And I try to pick out what the relevant stuff is here after watching this stuff for 30 or 40 years. And it comes to find out in the investigation that, again, the door was open and it was propped open by a teacher. And again, I'm sure that teacher didn't think that maybe propping that door open for whatever reason, whether it was a convenience factor, whether it was ventilation or whatever, would lead to the deaths of kids. Police also revealed there were a series of 911 calls from a teacher and two students while they were barricaded inside with the gunman. One kid pleading with a dispatcher, quote, please send police now. These are elementary school kids, middle school kids. The calls were taking place until moments before Ramos was killed, showing that people were still alive in the class, even though authorities believed the killing had stopped. The teacher, who was not identified, ended up one of the victims, while the two kids who placed the calls survived. A new revised timeline of how the shooting unfolded showed that officers were on the scene, who were on the scene, hesitated to go into the room where Ramos was barricaded because the on-scene commander, the police chief of Uvalde, Pete Arredondo, believed the killing had stopped. So again, this is the Uvalde police chief, Pete Arredondo. He was the on-scene commander. He, and I'm just reading this as it was put here, he believed that the killing had mostly stopped, whatever that means. Most of the shots were fired in the first 4 minutes, according to the police commander. And he said Arredondo mistakenly thought it had become a barricade or a hostage situation. So again, this apparently is part of the confusion. I guess if police think it is a lone person barricaded or they are holding hostages, they will. Not saying whether it's wrong or right. Lord knows I never came anywhere close to being a police officer, but these are the things that happen in harrowing sessions. McCraw said, quote, the incident commander at the time believed it was a barricaded subject. They had time and there were no kids at risk. He went on to say, quote, there were 19 officers in there. In fact, there were plenty of officers to do whatever needed to be done, with one exception. The incident commander inside thought they needed more equipment and more officers to do a tactical breach. So again, at least according to this, this is why people are now questioning the response. I'll have more on this. What are your thoughts? Do you have any law enforcement training in this? Now, again, we're not here to Monday morning quarterback this. We're not here to criticize. But a lot of men and women I know listening go back to their military days, or maybe they were in law enforcement. I know I've got some active and retired law enforcement people thinking, were you ever involved in a situation, of course, maybe not like this, but something close to this? How do you train for this? Is what you're hearing now surprising you, or perhaps not, on this Friday? 203-333-9422. It is Connecticut Today, 333-WICC. Telephone number, of course, is 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So again, we're getting the timeline. As sad as it is, people should hear this and understand what happened here. You had this gunman descending on this school in Uvalde, Texas, and it just seems here that this was one of those scenarios where it was just a confluence of probably the worst that could happen. Now, to this propped open door, I guess they're saying that when there was a report of an active shooter in the area, people began to look around and saw the crashed truck in a ditch near a campus. A teacher had, again, propped the door open at 11:27 a.m., a minute before Ramos crashed that truck into a ditch near the campus. Because remember, there was a report that there was an active shooter in the area. And remember, we heard the school went on lockdown. The shooter, Ramos, popped out of the passenger side of the truck, brandishing a long rifle and carrying a bag of ammo. Then he fired shots at two men at the funeral home nearby. The teacher ran into the building to get her phone and came back outside, but left the door propped open. She made a 911 call at 11:30 a.m. local time while Ramos walked across the parking lot and opened fire on the school building. Now, And we'll go to the phones momentarily. An armed student resource officer was not stationed at the school, but ended up driving to the back of the school toward a person he thought was the suspect, but it was actually a teacher. They say, quote, in doing so, he drove right past the subject, who had hunkered down behind a vehicle. That's when he began shooting at the school. One story that, again, is still there, but it's kind of descending the news triangle over the past weeks, and it shouldn't be, is, of course, the ongoing aggression by Russia, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, as we continue to have local experts on to talk about this. A return visit from a gentleman we've had on the show numerous times, Dr. Matthew Schmidt, a political science professor and national security professor at the University of New Haven. Matt, it's Paul here again. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Doing well.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. Let's talk about the situation there. We haven't talked in a while. Give our listeners, Matt, an assessment of the situation here. We're weeks and weeks and weeks into this. It's bloody. It's ugly. The destruction of a wonderful country, at least many areas, continue. How does this shake out to you? What do you see here?
The big takeaway, I think, is that the battlefield has flipped since the last time that you and I talked, which is to say Russia was on the offense and Ukraine was on the defense. And that has changed now. And so Russia has actually rushed to the east and is trying to essentially set up a line, a defensive line that takes in all of the Donbas region instead of just the smaller area they used to control. And Ukraine, on the other hand, is trying to get there and have the combat effectiveness to go on the offense and interdict Russian forces before they settle in. That's the big picture. The other thing is that this is really a war now of force generation. The fighting is taking place in a very small area of a few cities, and we often get caught up in looking at the map and saying which place is now blue, which place is now red, and that kind of thing. But really, for both sides, this is about wearing each other down, about killing and injuring as many troops as you can in order to degrade the combat effectiveness of the other side in preparation for this period, I think, which you'll see over the summer, where the fighting sort of dies down as each side are trying to replace troops, rebuild units, and bring in weapons and increase training time.
What do you make, Matt, of these constant reports we get every few days from this expert or that expert or somebody in Ukraine? And even now there's one coming out of Russia saying Putin isn't long for the world. He's sick. He's already got people trying to replace him. There are more people saying, hey, this is an awful mistake. It's going to cripple Russia for decades. Do you put any stock in that stuff at all, or is this just propaganda?
I do put stock in it. I think you have to be very, very careful. We've seen over and over again where this kind of stuff has turned out to be false. The Kremlin is very sealed, and it's hard to see what's going on, behind that curtain. But there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that there is growing distrust in the political elite of Putin. You just had some governors in the Far East, put out an open letter saying that Russia should withdraw from Ukraine. And you've seen things like that, sort of pretty regularly every few days, every few weeks right now. But the big variable here is whether or not anybody else has the power to change this policy other than Putin. And if not, right, whether or not Putin still has the loyalty of the security services in order to, attack, investigate, or kill anybody that he wants to in order to keep control over the situation. And I think right now that, the advantage goes to Putin, and everything else is sort of up in the air.
Dr. Matthew Schmidt is the guest, University of New Haven political science and national security professor and expert. Dr. Schmidt, hang on. We'll be right back with you. Want to get a little deeper into this as, again, the Russian invasion of Ukraine has not stopped. Western armaments still keep, moving into the country. And as Dr. Schmidt just said, they're looking out now over the summer, maybe into the fall. So no imminent end to this, we think. More coming up. First, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we continue with a few more minutes with one of our go-to folks, as we've been discussing world events for a few years on this show now, including now, of course, top of mind still, the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine, Dr. Matthew Schmidt from the University of New Haven, an authority in political science and international relations. Matt, what did you think of those comments the other day from former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who has suggested, and it caused a firestorm, not surprised, at least on my end, that if Ukraine wants to end this, they've got to just give up some land to Putin. What did you think of that?
Well, I'm struggling to respond to that. Henry Kissinger comes from an age when people purportedly were not interested, or at least he was not interested in the place of values in international relations. He has spent the rest of his career since retirement essentially trying to justify his policies in Vietnam by arguing that a sort of extreme realist version of foreign affairs that completely, you know, drops the idea of human rights, for instance, or the right of a nation to defend itself and have a common identity, doesn't matter. And I just simply disagree with that philosophy. And I think that he is inflaming the situation by even getting involved. His day was here and it is gone, and he should stay out.
Is this now essentially, Matt, a proxy war between NATO, the West, and Putin? Everybody, is this something that everybody says we have to avoid? And is it here? And is there a danger if this goes on for many, many more months of escalating to another level?
Take the last part first. There is a danger. There always is. I would caution people that they do need to be prepared that this war will go on for several months, if not a year or more. It is not a proxy war between the West and Russia. It has elements of that for sure, but fundamentally, this is a war of survival between Ukraine and Russia, and the U.S. and NATO are certainly involved in this. But the risk of escalation is mitigated by the fact that when General Austin or Secretary Austin, came out the other day and said, "Hey, U.S. policy is to degrade the Russian military." Right. Even when this is done, we want Ukraine to win, but when this is done, we want Russia to have less war making capability than they have now. That was pretty stunning, and he wouldn't have made that statement if they didn't look at the intelligence and say that the risk of escalation to say nuclear war was pretty low. In order to then go ahead and move American policy in that direction and do what they're doing now, which is sending heavy weapons and more heavy weapon systems and long range rocket systems into the battlefield. So they have a pretty strong sense that it's stable and is not going to escalate beyond Ukraine.
What do you make of the bid by Finland and Sweden to join NATO? Smart move. Most people like it. There are some, Dr. Schmidt, who say, hey, you can't poke the bear too much, but maybe this is a good time to poke the bear. What do you make of that?
I think it's the right move for them. I think it's the right move for NATO. And I think the bear's already been poked. And the thing that people forget is Putin doesn't really care what we do. He'll find a rationale to escalate the war if he wants to escalate the war. We're already sending heavy weapons into his enemy's arms from bases in Poland. If he wants to call that an act of war, he certainly can, right? And he has. He just hasn't acted on that. So there's nothing that we're going to do now that's going to give him a better case to escalate the war than he already has.
Finally, Dr. Schmidt, what about the scenario of politics and the thirst or lack thereof in the American people for international issues? You know, I love to read presidential history, political history in this country. And you go back to so many presidential races, left, right, Democrat, Republican, and I'm stunned at how forefront international relations were and foreign affairs were in the Reagan years and the Kennedy Nixon years and the Eisenhower years. But maybe I'm wrong, Matt, but does this just seem to be a blur to the American people now or not? What do you think?
No, I go back to the Clinton campaign. I think it was Paul Begala who said, or James Cargo, right, who said it's the economy, stupid. And in fact, when you look back and political scientists look back on this, they find over and over again that foreign policy almost never turns national elections. It's almost always issues of the economy more than anything else. And so I don't find it unusual at all that that's what's happening in the fall. In fact, I find it unusual that American attention has lasted this long on Ukraine. And every time I leave my house and go for a walk and I see a Ukrainian flag fluttering around New Haven, I'm stunned that people are that involved in it. So I do think it's the opposite, really.
Matt, thank you so much. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven Political Science, National Security Professor, a national expert on the continued invasion of Ukraine. Matt, thank you. Have a safe weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Appreciate the time, as always.
My pleasure.
All right, take it easy. There you go. Dr. Matthew Schmidt, University of New Haven, political science expert, national security. A lot of us that talk on this program and were products, at least at one time, and for me it was from nursery school all the way on up to senior in high school, of a Catholic school education. And it's no secret that some Catholic schools are having a little bit of a tough time right now. You've got these mergers of schools. My school merged. I went to St. Aidan's in New Haven. It's now St. Aidan's St. Brendan in New Haven. And let's talk about that with Grace Torres. Grace joins us. She's the principal of St. Mary's St. Michael's in Derby. Hi, Grace. It's Paul here at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon. How are you, Paul?
Very well, very well. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. A lot of people don't know about this, and I didn't until a mutual friend of ours introduced me to what you folks are doing. But again, I guess, Grace, your school, St. Mary and St. Michael, that was a merger years ago too, right?
It was. Yes, it was. Actually, I'm the first graduating class of that merger back in 1989 when St. Mary School and St. Michael School came together at that time. So it's very interesting, you know, part of the history, having been part of St. Mary's school at that time and then being part of that first graduating class. So part of my experience there, there as a student and now as an alum as well. And then a mother, both my children have gone through the school as well. One's graduating this year as well. Mm-hmm. And so the school is very near and dear to my heart. And it's been a pleasure to be able to come back and serve in this capacity as their servant leader.
Grace, how tough is it for Catholic schools? You know, a lot of people still send their kids to them, but, you know, we see some of these schools shuttering completely. Some of them, like your schools, your combined school, my combined school years ago in New Haven, merge. Is the whole merger thing, is it working? Is it a viable way to save and better Catholic education in the area and in the U.S.?
So, you know, I think it's very difficult. You know, we're definitely going through difficult times over the years. The Catholic education is certainly a very viable, you know, vibrant school that we were able to offer, the schools are able to offer. However, it does become some difficulties in some parishes because usually the parishes are part of, are sustaining the schools or the schools are trying to sustain themselves. So it does become a little different. Every environment, every community is different. The demographics have changed in communities as well. COVID hit. You know, for our schools, we've been able to see actually an increase in enrollment over the past 2 years. Honestly, the COVID situation that has hit our world here has been in some way for us a blessing where we've seen increased enrollment in our schools. But I think, you know, a lesson learned in any of the situations, because we never want to see a school close, is, you know, find what are some things that we could change or make happen. And those adjustments can be done on an individual level in different parishes and different towns.
And there are costs, obviously, Grace, and the guest is Grace Torres, the principal of St. Mary's, St. Michael's in Derby. But I know, Grace, a lot of parents who, you know, at one time went themselves, who would like to send their kids or maybe see their kids or grandkids go there. You know, there is a funding question, right? And there are questions of tuition and how to pay for that.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the great things that we're able to provide with for our families is there's a lot of support out there for our Catholic families through the Archbishop's annual appeal that happens every year. Funding comes to our schools that we can provide scholarships to our children. We also have private foundations that will also offer some assistance to our schools. And one of our bigger supporters are our alumni that come back and help us through different events that we do throughout the school year. Whether it's an alumni appeal, we actually have a recognition dinner that we do each year. We do the Great Give. That's a pretty big fundraiser here within the Valley and the Greater mm-hmm. Valley Community Foundation and the Greater New Haven community as well. So they come back, and also I will tell you, our supporters are our parishioners, you know, grandparents, parents, families, graduates, alumni that come back and say we want to help, whether it's volunteering or monetary donations. They're there and present in our community.
And finally, I see you do have a couple of events coming up, Grace. Tell us about that. There's a bingo, I guess, June 11th, and
yes.
wine tasting in August. So how are those going to work?
Yes. So we have on June 11th, we have a bingo extravaganza that's going to be taking place at Warsaw Park. Doors are opening at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's an all-day bingo with high prizes. It's going to be $45 admission ticket. So we're very excited for this. A lot of people have been calling, and we're going to be releasing the link for RSVPing for this grand event because it will be limited seating. So we're excited about that big event. And also in September, we have a wine tasting. One of our alumni is Maria Conlin, you know, former UConn alumni. We just had our sports banquet with our kids
sure.
at her new place. She just opened up a new place in Shelton called Steady Habits. Tasting Lounge, which is great. I would totally recommend people to take a look at it. Mm-hmm. And so she has opened up her place for us, and we're going to be having a wine tasting in late September in this coming year.
Great, great. Now the website, folks, stmarysstmichael.org. That's stmarysstmichael.org. stmarysstmichael.org. If you have a child of that age, could hold of them, you can look at the facility and maybe consider that. But the bigger picture here is to consider and try and maintain, if you can, any way you can, a Catholic school education in the state, because those schools do some really good stuff. Grace Torres, the principal of St. Mary's, St. Michael's in Derby. Grace, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck.
Thank you very much. I'm actually at our class night for our graduating class of 2022. So they're
excellent.
Waiting for me at the other lounge here. But I know they're listening, so I just want to give them a shout out to our class of 2022.
Great. Thank you, Grace. Give us a call anytime. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Grace Torres, principal of St. Mary's, St. Michael. And check them out, stmarysstmichael.org, stmarysstmichael.org. And you can be like me. You can be a God-fearing, nice Catholic boy.